Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have one round. Nope. How many? Three? Four?
Four.
We've got some stuff to talk about. Round number one. What is it, Kate?
You've got Firewatch, eh? Remember those crazy wildfires in Canada last year? It turns out that 14 of them were set by a conspiracy theorist who was, drumroll please, telling people the Canadian government was setting those fires.
This is very unfair because Kate wrote the sheet today and she said that I had to read everything in a Canadian accent. And then when I put it over to her, she only did it the first words. Very, very uncouth, Kate. Very upsetting.
In true Canadian, let me say, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Sorry about that.
Round number two, tactical turds. Apparently, civilians in long lines at Disney World are making ride lines their magical little toilets. It's a small world, folks. I've been to Disney multiple times, and the stuff that you see there, whew. I don't know what's more crazy, Disney or Iraq or Afghanistan.
Or seeing somebody get finger blasted in a line for a roller coaster at like Six Flags.
True.
They're always in a Tweety Bird, oversized Tweety Bird t-shirt.
Yep. Round number three, we're going to sit down with a Marine Corps captain who is trying to go for the Olympic team. She's doing a great job. She's over at Quantico. You're going to enjoy hearing from her. I don't know how people have time for extra stuff like that.
The Marine Corps women's basketball team living in our barracks, and that was like their main job for a while, I feel like.
Yeah, but there can't be how many people are bobsledding?
That's a good
point. You have a platoon of bobsledders? I guess we'll ask her. How it works. Yeah. Round number four, we're going to have a quick news roundup. There's been a bunch of stuff that has happened this week, so we're going to talk about all of that. Captain Cons is out today. He's doing something else. We got Kate. Is Buckshot in the back?
Buckshot is sleeping on the bed right now. We'll see how long that lasts. He's like a little starfish. And we got Spork.
Yep.
As usual, he's like my parrot pirate.
Yeah. So if you want to watch the YouTube, you can see Kate being mom, doing mom stuff, whether it's babies or cats. She's doing the mom thing.
And you can see how dirty our bedroom is.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. All right.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about, because we just moved up here, me and Kate, like both of our families moved up here. I've lived in Texas my whole life, or for like the last 12 years, lived in Florida, lived in Okinawa, and lived in Virginia. Virginia is the coldest place that I've ever lived. And I think the coldest temperature that I had ever been in before this week here was probably around 5 to 10 degrees, was probably the coldest that I ever experienced. This week here, wildly, wildly different.
Yeah, it's been negative 10 degrees, negative 12. Up in like Montana and stuff, it's like negative 30 something. So I don't know how they're doing that. But yeah, we're in a cold snap. And they said even for Chicago, this cold snap's lasting longer than usual. Like, it's not crazy for them to get a day of negative 10, but we have like a week of negative 10. The lake is steaming because the water is so much warmer than the air. It's starting to freeze over, but it's absolutely freezing. My son's daycare was canceled. Chicago public schools were canceled because it's too cold for the kids to be outside. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, last night we've had, even though the regular temperature was negative 10, we had all kinds of stuff that was like negative 35, wind gust of like negative 40. I went outside. It was the first time that I had been like that cold. And poor Baby Dale, man. Baby Dale and Gus, I think they had the worst of it. We had to put these little booties on them so that they would even touch. Gus still looked like his hands or his paws were hurting so much just by being outside. When I was out there, I felt like my pants would get stiff.
There's a video of somebody, you know, people do the water bottle flip to try and get it to land on top. People here are freezing their jeans outside and then they're flipping them to try and get them to land like someone standing.
Yeah.
So it's really cold. People in my local Facebook pages are like, can anyone come help me? I'm iced out of my car. I can't get in. I can't open my car doors. Pipes are freezing. Yeah, it's a whole debacle. So, yeah.
Big debacle. But it's actually been kind of enjoyable. Like, not the last 2 days where it's crazy, crazy cold. But McCartney was off on Friday for a snow day, gone for like 8 hours from the house, just sledding the entire time.
Yeah.
All the kids had so much fun, have multiple sleepovers because they've been out of school for like 5 days now. It's been a good time.
Got to tell you, different vibe with a toddler.
I bet.
Boy, oh boy, when you're stuck inside with a little energy ball, different vibe. I'm glad you're having fun.
And you can't even take him on like a walk or do anything. Because even if you could do it with Cash, you got Buckshot. He sure can't do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about what we could have kept warm with by some wildfire. You see that?
Yeah, it's transition? A shame we don't have a big forest fire blazing through.
Yep.
But anyway, this is from CBC News. A Quebec man who posted conspiracy theories online that forest fires were being deliberately set by the government has pleaded guilty to starting a series of fire hits himself that forced hundreds of people from their homes. Brian Perret, age 38, pleaded guilty Monday to 13 counts of arson and one count of arson with disregard for human life at a courthouse in Chibamagou, Quebec. Longtime stoolies. Chibamagou.
I need a shirt with Chibamagou.
Oh, add that to Saskatoon, Terre Haute, and Chibamagou. Okay. Prosecutor Marie-Philippe Charon told the court that two of the 14 fires set by Perret forced the evacuation of around 500 homes northwest of Quebec City. And residents of those 500 homes, so that's like probably over 1,000 people, were out of their homes for days because of this guy. And this is where I get how arsonists get off on doing that shit sometimes. That's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah.
To secretly force thousands of people, you have the power to force thousands out of their homes and no one knows it's you. Like, I get it. If you're a psycho, I get it.
Is this the same fire that sent like smoke all the way to Chicago and New York? Is that that fire?
It was part of, I mean, there was so many, most of those fires were set by lightning, but it was part of that huge rash of fires. And he set these, you'll find out, because all these other fires were going on. The Lake Cavan fire was the biggest set by Perret, burning nearly 873 hectares of forest. Is that the same as an acre about, probably?
I have no idea what a hectare is.
Sure it's huge.
I guess us. We're the fucked up ones, I guess.
Yeah. But provincial police and first responders observed that some of the fires had no possible natural cause, adding that evidence was found that some of the fires had been criminally set. I'm always amazed at how these fire experts can figure out how a fire started, because everything, I wouldn't know where to look, where to start, especially in massive forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you even know to go back to the scene and everything is burned, and how do you figure that shit out? But they did.
You can't get away with anything. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
If you can't burn down a couple hundred thousand hectares without people finding out, what can you do?
What can you do anymore? Our hands are tied. Charon said police first spoke to Perret on June 2nd. He had been seen in the area around where one of the fires had started and was considered a witness. While he denied causing the fires, he demonstrated a certain interest in the fires during the interview, which led police to suspect him. Number one rule of arson, and even I know this, do not go back to your fire and jerk off while you're watching it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You got to be horny at your handiwork when it comes to arson. Same thing, a lot of those like serial killers, they'll find them just hanging out in the crowd doing interviews and stuff. I forget what case it was, but there was it the Idaho murder guy that was doing interviews and stuff? Do you remember? Like he did.
There was a bunch of stuff with him that he was really, and he was taking like criminal classes and class and being like, here's what I think the guy would do, blah, blah, blah. Like he was being a lunatic. But yeah, you can't go back to your own fire and have a boner about it. No. Number one. In June, police, they were like, that's weird. This guy gets real excited. This witness gets real excited whenever we talk to him about these fires. So police started watching his Facebook page where he continuously posted about these specific fires. Among the posts were claims that the fires were deliberately set by the government to trick people into believing climate change.
He's like a January 6th fire guy.
He saw all the other fires taking place across Canada, the ones you're talking about where the smoke was everywhere. And he's like, the government's doing that. I'm going to make it worse and really make it seem like the government's doing that. So that was his whole vibe. His ideology and behavior matched a profile of the suspect developed by provincial police specialists. So essentially, these were the mind hunters of arsonists who were like, we know how these lunatics think. Police started tracking him, and lo and behold, wherever his little vehicle went, fires were sparking off. So yeah, they got his ass basically. He was arrested on September 7th, admitted to starting 9 of the fires. Also breaking and entering, causing public nuisance. More than 700 fires burned over 4.5 million hectares of Quebec forest over the summer. 99.9% of those were sparked by lightning. But maybe some, maybe he's onto something. Maybe it was.
I got to know how many acres that is. Hey Siri, how many acres is 4.5 hectares? Shit, she was just about to tell me. Say it again. Oh, here it is. 11 million acres.
Oh, shit. So 4.5 million hectares, 11 million acres. And so this guy, his 800 something hectare one was quite a doozy. So yeah.
That's a doozy for sure.
Yeah. Canada government not starting forest fires. It's this guy. It's so.
Would you, if you were given the opportunity, would you want to start a forest fire?
Not if I knew. I would think about all the little squirrelies, all the squirrely girlies, all the little animals in there. I would feel pretty bad. But I will say, when you first learn about fire as a kid and when you reach the age where you can get your paws on it, there is something addicting about it. I remember this kid on our school bus had a giant magnifying glass that through the bus windows, through the magnifying glass, you could burn holes in the coats of the kids in front of you if they weren't paying attention. And we burned holes in the bus seats. We burned holes in kids' coats. We burned everything.
I could see you being a big fire starter lady. I burned down, I think I've told the story before, but I burned down an entire field by my old house in a little place called Rat Out Landing was the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Me and my buddies, they had brand new blacktop. And this was when rollerblading was probably at its peak, when everybody wanted to rollerblade. Couple kids in Florida were playing some street hockey in the middle of the street. My dad had some firecrackers. We wanted to go do a little skating, the celebration. We wanted to put it out like we had just won the Stanley Cup. So we light these fires, or the firecracker, throw them up in the air, and one of them goes and skirts into the grass. The whole place, it's like a little fire at first. We're like, oh God, we can stomp this out. And then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, the entire place was, the whole field was on fire. It's probably the size of like 3 or 4 football fields. It was on fire, and you had different moms and dads on their fence, like spraying it down with water so they didn't go. I went back to my house, and my mom was like, what happened? I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't involved. We were just standing around. Next thing you know, that thing's on fire. Matthew, what happened? And she had to ask me like 3 times. And I finally was like, I set the fire. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
I got my ass beat.
It's crazy how quick that shit gets spread. I was on a couple ranges where the sparks go and a little bit of the feel, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they got to call Pendleton Fire to come put it out. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to round number 2. Totally something completely different.
Yeah, Disney turds. This is from San Francisco Gate. And this actually, it's resurfacing again, this story. So maybe more people are pooping again.
Uh-huh. But this the original one started in Tokyo. The original report was in Tokyo Disney.
And then people began talking about the one in America. And in November, it kind of went viral. And now people are talking about it again. It sounds, this is from San Francisco Gate, sounds too disgusting to be real. But a Disneyland urban legend of the gross-out variety seems to be true, that people are dropping trow and pooping where they stand in line for rides. Unfortunately, very real. Posters on the Disney World subreddit commented about the cursed things they saw while waiting in line. I am in the queue for Rise of the Resistance, and someone let their kid take a dump on the floor, and then they walked out and left it. What the fuck? One wrote recently. Now that I'm in the potty training stage, I get it, man. I get it. We need more bodies out there. Disney, man.
Like Disney, you're telling me with, imagine you right now, you're like, you know what? Taking the kids on a spring break vacation, going to have cash. He's going to love it. Take him on It's a Small World. You're there with your baby trying to feed or breastfeed or do something like with your baby so the baby's not miserable. And then you get halfway through, cash still potty training. And he's like, I got to go to the bathroom. If you do that, you lose your 25-minute spot that you've been waiting.
Yeah,
I'd hang him over the fountain and let him drop a deuce right there. It's a baby turd. It can't even be that bad.
It's just amazing. All these places meant for kids are so not kid and parent friendly. Like, you're so screwed. Because, right, and like, you're like, well, just put your toddler in a diaper for the day. Guess what? Toddlers, once they start wearing really cool Lightning McQueen underpants, they don't want to wear the diaper. They won't do it. And they don't want to shit in their pants either. So,
and if they're wearing the diaper, they're going to piss. Like,
yeah, there's no winning, really. So I kind of understand. I don't condone it. Ultimately, you have to take your kid out of the line, which sucks. But like, I get parents being like, fuck it, man. Just take a dump right here. I let my son piss everywhere. We pee all over Chicago. Like, we really do. And I look around for ring cameras on people's doors and I just mouth sorry if it's somebody's like little garden area. I'm like, sorry, he's two.
Well, honestly, they're being perverts if they watch.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, I try and cover as much as I can, but little kids too, when they pee, they take their pants down to their ankles, man. There's no
well, me like, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm chaps too. But anyway,
the best way not to get drips. And this article coming from San Francisco and being like, it's hard to believe. Your whole city has poop map. There's an app for poop map of where it is. When me and Kate were there, we saw so much human poop. It was all over the place.
There's a lot of poop, I gotta tell you. Fun fact, this was one of three shit-related incidents on that ride today, Rise of the Resistance. Less fun fact, I was here for all three of them, a user responded. So people working at the parks started chiming in and being like, yeah, I've cleaned this up. Bodily fluids no longer bother me after working at Disney. Let's just say that the attraction I work at has what the cast ended up dubbing the poop hall because of the amount of times guests have gone in there and pooped. We even put a camera and it didn't stop it. So like, and two, so many of these Disney lines, they make the line part of the attraction because they know you have to wait forever. So it's like you're in a dark cave for 30 minutes as you weave through. Uh-huh. People are going to be pooping.
Go behind Jack Black or Johnny Depp's little statue and take a shit right behind the Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, you poop in the It's a Small World river. Nobody knows.
Did you see the guy on acid a couple weeks ago there?
Yeah.
Stripped down naked, jumped out of the boat and was hanging out in the attraction while the boats went through.
Disney's got to be top scary place to be tripping. Right? Because you're around nothing but kids, nothing but crazy music, so many lights, so many people screaming and yelling. Yeah. That'd be overwhelming.
I have zero desire to do that. Good Lord, the poop hallway, another commenter responded, adding, from a former flight CM, this absolutely gives me war flashbacks. I dealt with way too many bodily fluids at that dang attraction.
What's a CM?
Flight
CM?
I think that whatever that ride is, they call it CM or whatever. So they helped launch the people off or whatever. Two former Disneyland custodial team workers have also written about this in their book, Cleaning the Kingdom. In the chapter titled Disgusting Things, former cast members Ken Pellman and Lynn Barron reveal there's a name for such happenings. It's Human Code H. A code H, according to the authors, originally meant horse crap because they have the horses that go up and down Main Street.
That was my original thought, Kate. Like, if this is such a problem, they have carriages that go by every day and people just have those dustpans. Just have somebody that's their job. They go into the human kennel.
Yeah, this term was later modified to reflect a bowel movement of the human variety. And the gnarliest story occurred at the Indiana Jones Adventure in Disneyland. There's a pair of individual use restrooms just backstage from the North Unload, I guess from where people get off the ride. It's mainly for cast members, but guests could and did use it. But a woman who did not know this burst into the control room for the attraction and basically got diarrhea in the control room for the ride while the people were in there. It must have been challenging for the ride operator.
How horrified you'd be as a normal, like, because you have people. Spork just jumped right up on Kate. Yeah. Like, it was a beautiful pounce. But can you imagine being that a normal person and the mind, the effects on your mind, if you had to go that bad where you're going in that closet? You must have been in a world of hurt for a long time, because you're not just going in there on a whim because you feel like you need to go just a little bit.
Well, I imagine you're at Disney, you're eating all those sweet treats, you get in this long line, you start to get the goosebumps, but it's almost your turn. You've waited an hour, so you're about to have diarrhea, but you're like, I think I can squeeze this ride in. You get on a ride that shakes your intestines 1,000 ways. What are you going to do when you get off? You're screwed. You got to run in the control room, take a diarrhea. I mean, it's obvious.
Do you remember the movie Problem Child 2?
Never saw it.
Oh, wow. You'd be a huge Problem Child head. Well, never mind, because there was one in the Problem Child 2. He gets away, goes to a little fair carnival, and they put him on the Gravitron. And the kid had never ridden the Gravitron. And he absolutely, it's like a wave of puke. And it goes around, and because of the Gravitron, it hits everybody on the ride. I would imagine that's what it's like if you're going down like Space Mountain and you diarrhea all the place. People would much rather it be in the control room.
Oh, yeah. Think of the Sandlot when they all do dip and then get on the Gravitron. But yeah, not good, not good. So, but it reminded me, there's so many stories. I feel like everybody in the military has a story. If you've served in the military, you've pooped somewhere you weren't supposed to at least once. Yeah. Or you've pooped in an ammo can or a trash bag or a hole or somewhere. You've used your sock as toilet paper or whatever you've had to do. But civilians out there doing it too. That's my military tie-in.
I like that. I knew. I was like, you got to tie it in somehow. Yeah. All right, let's move on to our interview. Here it is. All right, now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have somebody else who has aspiring Olympic goals and she wants to be there in 2026. Representing her country, but she already represents her country as a captain in my beloved United States Marine Corps. That's where she's stationed, but she is in Switzerland right now. Is that what you said?
Yes.
She is in Switzerland right now, but we had her on because she does something very cool that I've never heard many Marines do. Now, I know Marines who do wrestling or boxing or things like that, but I have never come across somebody who does the bobsled team. But before we do that, I want to get it in with Riley T-Jack about what's going on in her Marine Corps career, because she's a captain. She's at Quantico. What is your day-to-day life like right now?
Well, right now, life is very centered around bobsled. We're in the middle of winter. So what this looks like is early morning wake-ups, training with Team USA, getting another workout in after sliding for 4 to 5 hours at the track, and then working remotely.
What does sliding mean? Does that mean like going down the track?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Actually doing the dang thing, like okay. Going in 85 plus miles an hour and getting the training and stuff done in order to prepare for races.
So what, whenever you're doing something like that, because going skiing or snowboarding, there's bunny hills and like, is there any bunny hill equivalent for bobsled, like where you're not going balls to the wall, where you could kill yourself if you immediately go over the wall?
Yeah, some tracks, especially when you're learning and you're younger in it, you don't go straight from the top. There's sometimes like an entrance for a lower start. So for example, if in Lake Placid, it has 20 curves, there's 4 different starts. You could start halfway down the track, 3/4 up the track, or even just 2 curves before the top, to make sure that you aren't necessarily experiencing the speed. So it should be a little bit slower for you to learn. But at the level that I'm at now, you know, you show up. I haven't been, for example, to this track in Switzerland for a year. The last time was World Championships last year.
Wow.
And you just hop right in and you bomb it off the top. And you're like, well, here we are. So, yeah.
It seems legitimately insane that that's the way that you guys do it. Because every time I watch like the luge or bobsled or anything like that, those type of sports, one, we don't see it a whole lot on TV here. Like you just don't see it. Do you guys, like, you're playing football, you're doing MMA stuff, you study the tape, you study the route that you want to take. Do you put in a significant amount of time kind of tracking it out? Like which way you, like, I got to go left here, I got to time it out. Is it based on time or feel?
Both. And that's what's really hard. So essentially I'm a pilot. So I actually am driving and navigating it. And I have to memorize every single track.
Yeah.
Because they're all different. Right. That's another thing, right? Like I grew up playing softball and I played college softball. For the most part, I knew what a softball field looked like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Here in bobsled, you know, every single track is different. And so I have to memorize what these tracks look like, right? So if you said, hey, Riley, walk me through St. Moritz, Switzerland, I could tell you every single direction and what these curves look like in the profiles. And then from there, there's a part of like the feeling of me actually in it, right? I know where I want to go, right? We go in with a game plan. All athletes do. Hey, you know, fighters are like, hey, I want to stand up on my feet. You know, some of my fighters are like, I want to get them to the ground. Obviously, I have a game plan. Hey, here's the lines that I want to take and to take them fast. But going upwards of 90 miles an hour, dealing with different kinds of weather circumstances, you know, a bunch of different factors, that can change. And when I get off course, how quickly can I get back on track? And so that a lot of it is based off of the feeling. So I'm feeling these pressures, I'm feeling these G forces, and I'm trying to manipulate and use them to take a fast line, which means to do less, but not so much less that I end up on my head.
And I don't know how you guys even see, because your head is down so low. That's why I ask, is it timing? Like, and for a quarterback, if the wide receiver is going to break out, is it the timing of the route? Do you know based on time, or are you looking with your eyes of where to turn?
Both. You know, and there's sometimes different tracks like that are a little bit trickier. We will use kind of sometimes seeing. So like, hey, there's a piece of wood, and right here you need to be down by this point, for example. But the hard part with visual cues is sometimes they change. And sometimes on race days, right, you'll use something, but they'll put advertisements up or they'll change. And so you have to really understand. So part of it's timing. Part of it's like, hey, I know what's coming, anticipation. I know where to do this. But a lot of it is seeing, and, you know, to be aerodynamic and to drop hundreds of a second, you know, I am only have my eyes above the cowling of the sled. So you don't see anything else of me. And, you know, being up 10 feet high on walls and looking down is I drive by sight and by feel. But some drivers prefer to drive by cues and stuff like that. But I like to be reactive. I like to know what's coming. Okay, I'm in a bad position, and get that out. And a lot of that's from my Marine Corps training as well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking whenever you go in there, because most Marines have the ability in a stressful environment to kind of slow things down in their brain. Do you use the mantra of slow is smooth and smooth is fast when you're inside the bobsled?
Absolutely. And I always share this one story, but there was one time when I got into the sled, and as a pilot, I jumped from the side and two women, and then I shoot my legs in. And when I was shooting my legs in and I had these ice spikes, I kicked my rope, my rope that has my D-rings, basically carabiners that rotates the front axle. And I kicked it under my foot peg.
Wait. You're going 90 fucking miles an hour and you're using ropes? Like, it's not even.
No steering wheel. It is the most.
It's like primitive.
Yeah, you would think it'd be so much more high tech, and it is so basic in the sense of, if you look at my steering system, all steering systems are two bungees attached to two D-rings that hang down, and I'm navigating and pulling them to rotate the front axle of the sled.
I don't know a lot about cars, but I kind of know what's underneath it. You got like a catalytic converter, you got some tires, you got the powertrain. What's underneath the bobsled? Is it just some ice skates? What is it?
So on the very underneath, they're called runners. Essentially four blades. The front are different than the back. The front are smaller, the back are longer. And then you can have different radiuses within them. That's like within a standard. The fatter, the thicker the runner, the faster you go, but the less control you have. So a lot of athletes that are bobsled pilots kind of play around with, again, how can I have the least amount of control being fast without being penalized and crashing?
And is that your choice as the pilot whenever you're doing training, or you're trying to figure out which ones do you switch it out, kind of like football players would cleats based on your terrain?
Absolutely. Yeah. So different tracks are going to require different things. And so there's some tracks that are much more difficult where I want control and I'll sacrifice speed, because hitting a wall, for example, can cost me tenths of a second. And that could, you know, a hundredth
and a broken
of a second.
Bone. Yeah.
I like my ribs. So absolutely. So it's up to the athlete, obviously the pilot. We get coaches' input. And then honestly, we test them. But in a race, once you select that, you have to stay with that for the remainder of the race.
And I saw, stalking your Instagram a little bit, get more information. I saw that you had a big year this year, that you got promoted to captain, which you're the skipper of your ship, and now you're the skipper there. But not many Marines do what you're doing. So when you went and talked to your chain of command as a first lieutenant or second lieutenant, whenever you did it, how big did they look at you like you had a dick growing out of your forehead whenever they said it?
I think that the people that have worked with me realize that I say and want to do crazy things. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I don't like being told no very often, in the sense of like, I want to go after things and dreams and accomplish whatnot. And essentially the backstory was, you know, I went through over a year worth of training with the Marine Corps, combined officer candidate school, the basic school, logistics school. You get to this like mysterious fleet and it's COVID. Yeah. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And I got the unit I wanted in Camp Pendleton near San Diego. And I'm like, I love life. I was filling a captain's billet as a brand new second lieutenant as the S4.
Wow.
And I sat down with the XO, Lieutenant Colonel, my direct RS. And he's like, hey, just want you to know, you're in a non-deployable billet and all your peers will be deploying, but you won't be for the next 3 years. And as a hard charger motivator at the time, which I still am, but you know, even younger, like I want to go do something, get me out of this COVID nightmare in California. Mm-hmm. That was like devastating. And I kind of lost a sense of what was next in my life, which is something that I never have had, right? I worked to get a softball scholarship for Division I school, got that, worked to join the Marine Corps, finished at the top of my class, did that, get the, you know, MOS location I wanted, did that. And I accomplished all of these things. And then I get there. And obviously, you know, my next goal was to deploy and to test myself in the action. And then that got taken away from me. So I sat down and I was like, I need a reason to wake up and to train for something. The PFT, CFT, that's great. I need something else and I want to compete. You know, for women in college, I graduated at 22 and was like, I'm just now bigger, faster, stronger, and more mentally capable. Like this couldn't be the end of the road. And so where I played softball at, Alana Myers Taylor played softball at as well, who's a 5-time Olympic medalist. She's a stud. And I saw that bobsled was having an online tryout. And I said, you know, why not? I didn't tell my chain of command this at first, right? I'm like, well, why not? It gives me something to work out for.
Yeah.
So
ask for forgiveness and what have you.
Yeah. And for me, it was self-motivation. I'm like, what are the odds that this actually happens? I'm like, let's just get bigger, faster, stronger. Let's train for something. And so I did. And I submitted all the information. And then me being as bold as I am, I picked up the phone and I called the head coach.
Yeah, I actually like that about what you're saying, that you were an accomplished athlete, that you always had something to work for, you wanted to keep going. I actually took a screenshot of one of the Instagram posts that you had where you were talking about some of the adversity that you went through in 2023 and your personal life. And then you went on to say, but I did all of this. And you said, I won a pageant, competed in world championship. I bought my first home. I got promoted to captain, wrote a children's book, won a game show with my mom, and found me again. I talk a lot about where I think people need to embrace themselves. We have a culture now where you almost have to be self-deprecating. Most Marines are not self-deprecating, but you're kind of taking it to a new level. And I think that there is a certain amount of respect, like my co-host Cons, he played quarterback at West Point. And whenever you hear one of your officers was successful in an athletic endeavor, I think it changes your opinion because you know that they can do hard things, despite the fact that OCS and TBS are far harder than enlisted boot camp. But I look at somebody like you when you come back from this as a captain and you go back. Are you excited to work with the Marines when this is done? So you can kind of have that, especially like with the junior troops, like you might be junior, but look what I did when I was a second lieutenant, first lieutenant. Go out there and chase your fucking dream.
Yeah, that's my whole message. Honestly, if I can do it, you can do it. And I tell people, there's nothing special about me, really.
You're doing the self-deprecating. Not true. Not true. Just not everybody can be a D1 athlete. Not everyone can graduate TBS. And sure as shit, everybody can't be on an Olympic team. Go back to what we talked about before. Self-confidence, Riley. Let's go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it just in the sense of like, there are bigger, faster, stronger, better athletes than me. And that's a humility thing, not a self-deprecating thing. It's more like I've been blessed, you know, the Lord has provided, but also like I put myself out there. And too many times now people are scared of what other people think. And so they prevent themselves from even trying. And for me, I'm like, I don't care if I fail. I welcome failure. So I keep throwing myself out there. And when you read those lists, all those things were things people told me I couldn't do. People told me I could never be in a pageant. And quite honestly, I never thought in my life I'd do it. But here I am. You know, people told me, like, how are you going to have time to write a book? And I'm like, no, I want to inspire young women and children and let them know what's possible. So I did it. You know, and people are like, oh, when are you going to find the time? I'm like, I'll find it, you know, or, hey, I want to go on a game show with my mom. And we end up winning despite what everyone said, like, you and your mom are, you know, two blondes and what game whatever. Show? It was called Lingo. It was with RuPaul.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's very similar to Wordle. So it's actually a quick reaction word game. And yeah, we won a lot of money doing that, which was such a blessing.
How
and
much then, money are we talking?
90K.
Wow. That's yeah. a lot better than Wordle. I haven't won shit on Wordle.
Yeah. So it's on Paramount Plus, shameless plug. But yeah. And then, you know, you talked about coming back with the Marines. There's so much pride I have coming back with this boost of morale. Everyone's like, we've been following you, been watching you. Like, I bring my medals and I hang them in my office and people are like, tell me about it. And then, I've had Marines come up to me and they're like, you know, ma'am, like, I'm gonna take, you know, my sport more seriously, or I'm gonna get my real estate license, or, you know, I'm gonna get my college degree because no one in my family ever did. And if you can do that while balancing active duty, I think I can too. And that's been like the greatest gift that's been given back to me.
No. Yeah. And I think that's wonderful. I think back to my time in the Marine Corps, and there wasn't a whole lot of people that were doing or even focused on their secondary, what they're going to move to whenever they get out. So hearing that you're inspiring people to get their real estate license, I think is awesome. Let's talk about, because you're doing this, I'm really fascinated about what goes on with, like, you mentioned your RS, your reporting senior supervisor that you have right now. How do they determine of what you're doing as an officer inside your MOS or inside your capabilities when you're not around? And one, that shows incredible trust and confidence in you that you'll be able to do what you're supposed to do with absolutely little to no supervision. How do they balance keeping you on track of where you're at as a captain and progressing you on your career? And how do you do that, knowing that the bobsled will eventually go away, but you'll be back in digital camis soon?
Yeah. You know, chaps, I'll be the first one to tell you, I've hinted at it and I'm not scared to say this. You know, I'm looking at my career progression and I was a Marine first and that's my primary focus and commitment. So I'm going to work and do everything I can up until 2026. If I make it, great. If I don't, I don't. And then take my military career a lot more seriously. How do I balance it? You know, you want to talk about trust and confident leadership. I mean, me not being there is difficult. It puts more to do on my Marines and my bosses and that kind of stuff. And they take that because they see value in what I do and believe in me and trust me. And because of it, you know, word's gotten out through the Marine Corps and I give back and I do recruiting efforts and I travel the country to try to get more females in the Marine Corps and just honestly share my story. But actually, I just got news this Monday. I'm going to be deploying to Iraq in May. And that was my decision. I saw that.
So found out, they're like, you know what? This captain, she's going to be on the bobsled team for America. We need to send her to the desert as soon as we can so she can practice.
Well, actually, they kind of fought me on it a little bit. Essentially what happened, right? Like, I've been in bobsled for a little over three years now, working my butt off, trying to be the first Marine in the Olympics. And I saw that there was a position open. I saw that I was the only single without kids and has never deployed before on the list. And I called my boss and I said, sir, send me. And he's like, Riley, are you nuts? Like, the games are coming up, you know, you're going to miss competition, you know, you're going to Iraq, you're not going to Japan on a Marine base, you know? And I said, no, sir, I want to do my part as a Marine. And so that's something that people don't see. They see everything the Marine Corps has given me, but they don't see that my heart and my soul are with the Marines and wanting to have this career and build that and simultaneously try to balance being the most competitive athlete on the highest scale. And so, you know, if I can do it, then other people can do it. And if not me, then who? But I know what my mission is. And my mission is to go out there and get some with my Marines. And then my secondary mission is not to be given favors by the Marine Corps, but to use my uniform, to use the oath that I swore into and to go get some. And that's what I plan on doing.
That just motivated the shit out of me. I mean, there's over the past couple of years, like I would say 6 years, like there gets a point doing the job that I do where you get a little disenfranchised about what's going on in the military. You're disappointed that the barracks aren't better. You're disappointed that women are still being treated the way that they are, that there has to be congressional acts, more congressional acts to protect women from sexual assault and harassment and the men as well. All those different things. And to hear somebody say, this is what I love doing. I want to go out and defend. I want to be the Marine that I know I can be. I find that to be amazing. And I'm excited for you, but also I'm kind of like your bosses where I'm like, what the hell are you thinking, Riley? Like,
yeah.
So do you have to take a break for pre-deployment training and all that stuff too? Like you're going to be on the rifle range for a week. You're going to have to be doing your CFT and PFT and all kinds of different classes. How are you going to balance that?
Yeah, I already do. And that's the hard thing is it's what people don't see, right? Is the hours and the difference of training and what I put my body through it and mentally. And I will say this, bobsled season ends in March. I have a really big race March 23rd on ESPN3 in Lake Placid at our home track.
Okay.
The World Cup race. And then, yeah, I have April and May to prepare and go after it, but balance, right? So I'm in Europe now. I go back for February, train for both, come back, finish bobsled, go and get military. And then throughout the time there, you know, see what I can do for training while I'm out there. But I'm so excited because I want to keep testing myself and see what's possible, right? I want to do hard things constantly. That's what gets me that adrenaline and excitement is how hard, how much adversity can I welcome to navigate and push the ceiling of what I'm able to accomplish, right? And that's what we have that in our blood as Marines. We crave things that aren't easy, that are difficult, and want to go after them and then be the most successful in them despite all the odds. That's why I was so drawn to the Marine Corps. And so how I'm going to do it, Chaps, I'll let you know as the days go on. but I'm so freaking excited and can't wait to absolutely get this ball rolling and to do something and then, you know, show up there and be like, wait, weren't you just, I was just competing a couple weeks ago and now I'm here and let's get in the fight and let's go do what we need to do to protect our country.
That's awesome. And I told myself before we started, I wasn't even going to bring up Cool Runnings. Like I was like, it's not a, but if you're going to Iraq, I feel like I need to. Like if they could build that wooden bobsled and take it down, I feel like you can get you a working party. You go out there and be like, hey, give me 8 Marines right now to go build me a bobsled track. I feel like you guys can figure it out.
We probably could. And then I would try to bring them onto the team. And then the Marine Corps would get mad at me. So I don't know.
The entirety of the Marine Corps, all of First Meth wants to be
shifting to bobsledder.
I mean, you might be able to do it in the Army at like 10th Mountain. That might work out for them. You never know.
Yeah. Or Bridgeport.
Yeah, that would work too. Well, Riley, we really appreciate you coming on and telling your story. We're going to be following closely and hopefully you make that Olympic team and you do great things in the Marine Corps, which we're all sure that you will.
Thanks, Chaps, so much for the time. I appreciate it. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi. You did great.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciated talking to the young captain who is going to be hopefully representing the United States in the Olympics. That would be fantastic. Let's move on to a little bit of a news roundup. What's going on with Secretary Austin, Kate?
Yep. We were talking about the whole debacle last week where basically he disappeared and everybody's like, where is he? And he was in the hospital and everybody's like, wait, what? And it turns out the president didn't know. His top advisors, like nobody knew. The person who was supposed to like be in command and take over his powers was down in Puerto Rico slamming margs, according to me specifically. That's just
You have to
that.
Be probably mojitos though.
Mojitos, yeah, whatever. But anyway, he was released from the hospital on Monday, 2 weeks after being hospitalized due to complications from prostate cancer treatment, the Pentagon said. And that's nobody knew what he was in there for. And it turns out it was prostate cancer treatment. Austin, age 70, was admitted to Walter Reed on December 22nd. He returned on January 1st due to complications, including a urinary tract infection. And to be there in there for 2 weeks, that's some serious shit. Whatever the infections are, no joke. Like,
I mean, you can get your leg amputated and you're out of there in like a week and a half.
Yeah. So his hospitalization was not revealed until 4 days later. And the Pentagon did not specify why he was being treated. And I feel like, again, I know prostate cancer, that's really sensitive subject. And I understand, I have empathy for that. But like, when you're the Secretary of Defense, like you have to know everybody's going to be flipping out, and it's going to be even worse if you guys don't address it correctly. Like, right.
Yeah, there's a certain point, certain position where you don't have the benefit of having complete medical privacy. You just don't.
Yeah. The good news for Austin, Secretary of Defense Austin, the prostate cancer was treated early and effectively, so his prognosis is great. He has no planned further treatment for the cancer, and the infection is gone. And Biden basically said, that's okay. You're cool, man. I don't care that you disappeared for a minute and didn't tell anybody, which a lot of people not love and doesn't instill a lot of confidence.
I don't love it. I don't love it at all. Yeah. Like,
no,
you got to fire him. Like, even though he's going through a lot of stuff, just ask for his resignation or accept his resignation. Like, you got to do one or the other.
Yeah. And then finally, on an incredibly sad note, two Navy SEALs are missing in the Gulf of Aden off Somalia. They were on a mission to board a ship that apparently had Iranian made ballistic and cruise missile components that were headed to the Houthi militants in Yemen. Mm-hmm. And apparently the seas, I was reading, I don't know how much of this, there was so much speculation. Apparently it was 8-foot seas, really wavy. They go to board this ship that apparently had weapons going from Iran to the Houthi rebels. It's nighttime, it's dark out, and one of the SEALs falls into the water, and a second SEAL, following protocol, jumped into the water to rescue him, and they both disappeared. Again, incredibly fucking sad. A testament to not leaving a man behind to look into the 8-foot seas in the middle of the night and jump in after your buddy speaks volumes, but just incredibly sad. Searches are underway, but it's been many days now, so I don't know. Just really incredibly sad story there, but that's it.
All right, let's move on to some save rounds and alibis. Kate, do you have anything?
I don't think so. Just doggy paddling in the house. My back is thrown out, but that's okay. I'll be fine. It's following that story, it's like tough to be like, things are hard.
My back hurts. Yeah, but your back does hurt.
So yeah. But dealing with that, I had all these plans to like get super fit during maternity leave. They have these mommy and me stroller classes where you like put resistance bands on your stroller and work out with your baby with a bunch of other moms. And I just can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah, that seems like one of those things where you paid for a year-long membership to a personal trainer and then we're like, yeah, I'll just go once and be done with it.
I never followed up on it.
Everybody has that stuff. Like I thought I was at 200 pounds. I'd been going around my life like I was at 200 pounds, feeling good, still wearing the same size pants. I went on a scale, 222. Oof. Fat again.
We gotta get inspired. We have Frank the Tank at our office. He's under what? Under 500 pounds for the first time.
No, he's way under that. He's under 350.
Oh, he's under 400 pounds for the first time in 20 years or something like that. And he's going for a walk every single day. And he's starting like a Forrest Gump type movement where people are meeting up with him.
That's a great analogy. Yep.
And walking with him every day. He had tons of people in Central Park here in Chicago at the Lincoln Park Zoo in 2-degree weather. He had a bunch of people come out.
Even celebrities like JJ Watt was out there.
Yep. And so he's starting to post, here's where I'm walking today. And people are meeting him and walking with him. And I do find shit like that, like, really inspiring.
Yeah.
It is so hard to just get up and do it. So I'm hoping to start taking baby steps and do something to, because I tried on a new pair of mom jeans the other day and I couldn't get them halfway up my legs, you know? So
yeah,
that's okay.
All right. Well, I don't really have a whole lot either. You know what I don't like? Cause I like to talk to people about the things that I'm going through or the things that are in my life. That's the thing I don't like about books. Like, if somebody else hasn't read it, I want to talk to somebody. They don't know any of these people. And at that point, you're in it like 15 hours reading this thing. I want to talk about these people, these literary folks that have drawn my attention. And there's nobody I could talk to.
You got
to
join a book club. My local library does one. They meet at a pub every Tuesday night.
Yeah, but I don't want other people to pick what I want to read either.
I understand.
You know?
Well, you should start a book club.
Yeah.
Actually, fun note, I just got, I love military people, like, especially, you know, you have certain military people you've been following and interacting with on social media for so long, especially in our little mill Twitter community, you feel like you kind of know people. Have we had Matt Gallagher on the show before? We probably have.
Matt Gallagher sounds very familiar.
He's follow, give him a follow on Twitter. He wrote Daybreak. He wrote Youngblood, which was a great book. Highly recommend Youngblood for those who haven't read it. But this one is about a U.S. combat vet who volunteers for the war in Ukraine. And it's just, it's been good so far. My little sitting here stuck in the rocking chair read. But anyway, I just got a shout out. Military, little military author goofing.
There you go. Okay. All right. Cons will be back next week. So will Buckshot and Spork. And I will too. We'll talk to you then. It's on the retreat.
Okay. So